Okay, for a message this morning, I have just one word for a title. That word is history. Now, I don't consider myself to be much of a historian, so I'm not really getting into, you know, what happened in history, which history would entail, you know, facts and things that happened, things that came to pass and happened in the past. And I guess that's why the definition of history would be the word as we know it. Someone has, or I guess we've often heard the statement, one thing that we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And I'm curious what response I would get if we would do a ballot and you would have to put down true or false to that statement. Is that true or false? Maybe it's neither. Maybe we're somewhere in the middle, but if you would have to choose between one or the other, I'm curious what the percentages would be between true and false. I think it helps us if we define the word learn. And when I look at the word learn, I'm going to go with false. One thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. I believe that's a false statement if we define the word learn correctly according to our English dictionary. The word learn means to gain knowledge of, to acquire knowledge or ideas of something we didn't know about before. So do we learn from history? Absolutely. There's a lot of things that we learn from history. We gain knowledge of things. You know, we go back and we read books and things that were written about things in the past. We learn from that. Some things we remember, some we don't, but we do learn. Absolutely. I think what is trying to be said by that statement is that we don't apply the things that we learn. In other words, the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is to know something. You know, when you learn something, you have knowledge of it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to apply that. You're going to be wise about it. The 10 virgins that we heard about probably all had knowledge that the bridegroom was coming. 5 of them applied that knowledge, used wisdom. 5 of them were wise, but 5 of them were not. 5 of them, you know, learned that the bridegroom was coming to no avail because they didn't apply the knowledge. They didn't use wisdom. History gives us a lot of knowledge. When we go back and we look at history, and I'm not sure, would the Bible in Genesis chapter 1, would that be the first history that we can read about, that we know about? When God created the heaven and the earth. There are many who would claim that, you know, it starts way beyond that. I guess if you would go with the thing of God being eternal, then the millions of years are correct. But the actual creation, that God created the heaven and earth and created man, according to the Bible, which I believe is true, was only a little over 6,000 years. And that is where our history as we know it would start. And there are a lot of things that we get from that, a lot of knowledge that history gives us, but it doesn't give us wisdom. That wisdom comes from God. As we look at history, are we contributing to history? History is the facts of things that happened. So just for illustration, I want all of you to stand. if it's convenient. You are making history right now when you stood. This is something you'll ordinarily do. Now, I could say that, you know, we're going to have this message today with all of you standing. That would maybe make a little more of something that you would remember, especially if, you know, we would go till 12 o'clock. You'd probably remember this part of history. You can be seated now. Or I said something to my wife about making this the shortest sermon in history. You would maybe remember that as well. And, you know, and we could probably, you know, just stop right now and we could go and we could study history, Bible, history books, or whatever, and we could learn a lot of things that wouldn't necessarily need a message. Because there's a lot of things out there that we can learn if we put in a little bit of effort. So yes, we are contributing to history whether we like it or not. The choices that we make, the things that we do, decisions that we make in life, that contributes to history. Some of them may be remembered, some of them may not. Some of the more trivial things, you know, the little things that, you know, for instance, what you're going to eat for lunch today. You know, a year from now, you probably won't remember it. But if something extraordinary happens later today, a year from now, you would probably remember it. You might may not remember the date, but you probably remember the incident. If something happens. The way I understand, there's going to be an eclipse coming in a little over 3 weeks. And what is it, only 90 to 100 years that this happens? You know, I have faint recollections of some eclipses in my lifetime. I don't remember years or dates, but I remember welding helmets and you're looking at the sun and getting almost twilight. I don't remember percentages or, you know, how close it was to being a total eclipse. But those are things that make impressions on us. A more important question would be, what are we contributing to history? I believe that's more important than the thing, just the fact that whether or not we are contributing. What are we contributing? You know, when we look at the knowledge that we can gain by studying history, by looking at the Word of God, by looking at history books and, you know, reading about things that happened down through the years, I believe that having the wisdom to contribute to history in a good way is only possible by the grace of God. You know, it's easy enough to contribute in a manner that others can see, observe your life, and they can see how not to do things or how not to live their lives. That just kind of comes natural for us human beings, you know, all the mistakes and humanism, the things that we mess up. And I'm sure, you know, we look at our lives and there's things that before we're very old, there are things that we would have done different if we had another go at it. Things, mistakes that we would not have repeated if we had another chance at it. And sometimes we do get other chances at, but we can't undo some of the things, some of the decisions and choices that we made in history that, you know, may or may not affect us or others around us. So it's easy enough to live our lives in such a way that we show others how human we are. But in order to live a life that others can look at that life and say that and can see that, you know, that is Christ, that is God that is working in that life. I believe that's only possible by faith, by the new birth, by the divine nature, by the grace of God, the goodness of God within us, and all to the glory of God. It's not of us. It's because of the power of Christ within. And I would like to say that as we look at history, I believe every person's story is different. Every person's contribution in history. It's like snowflakes. Every person's story and life is a little bit different. There are no two. If you go back in the millions of people that you could read about in history, you won't find any two that are exactly alike. And their contribution, their story was exactly the same. And I believe it's well for us that we remember that as we go through life, that we don't, you know, become too critical of others that aren't living life exactly the way we are, because God did create us different, and God has a different plan and a different purpose for every one of us. So allow ourselves to be different, to make a different contribution to history. But it's important that we have that wisdom, that power of Christ within, so that we can make the right kind of contribution to history as we go through life. I would like to think a little bit about some contributors, some people that you think about, come to your mind when you think about history in the Bible. I'd like to open it up, you children as well. Who stands out to you in the Bible that did something that maybe you read about and it stands out to you? Raise your hand if you can think of someone. All right. Rosa? Esther. Queen Esther, yes. Very good. Mike, did you have one? That's right. Building an ark when it had never rained before. Queen Esther was willing to lay down her life if that's what it took. If I perish, I perish, she said, for the sake of her people. I believe those two were people that didn't just get knowledge, they applied wisdom. Anyone else? Virginia? Abraham, okay? In any particular instance? Yes. I was thinking in terms of when he left his country, not even knowing where he was going. Jan, did you have one? Yes, and that was a little, we remember that. Careful and troubled about many things. Sharon? Joseph standing what was right in Egypt, yes. Did I see a hand up, Lewayne? Yes. I guess both of them made history, didn't they? Yes. But especially David, and seeing Goliath as not a big man, but as someone that was defying the living God. Tyler? And then he was thrown into the lion's den. Yes. Continuing to pray as he did aforetime. Heavenly? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm a little hard of hearing. Okay, could someone else repeat that? Okay, what was the name? Isaac. Titus. Okay. I'm sorry. I was having trouble getting that name. Okay, so you're in his obedience. Okay. Good. All right. Anyone else? Jason? Daniel's three friends. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes. Refusing to bow to the golden image. Jonah? Caleb and Joshua, yes. Yes, the others saw themselves as grasshoppers, but Caleb and Joshua said, we are well able to overcome because they were looking at God. Yes. There are many accounts like that in the Bible of people who, you know, we read the faith chapter in Hebrews 11, many people who applied wisdom, accounts were given. And then there are others who did not do so well. Thinking of Judas, you know, when he betrayed Jesus and then hung himself in despair. Another one that is recorded in the Bible is Mary, when she washed the feet of Jesus with an expensive perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Different things like that. Another three people I have here that we don't think about. When David was running from Absalom, him and the people that were with him were hungry. Does anyone know the name of the three men that brought them food? I wouldn't have known. But it came up in a Google search that I did. You know, it was Shobai, Maker, and Barzillai. Those three men, I mean, I didn't know they existed. But they brought a lot of good food when David and his people were running from Absalom. They made a difference in history. You know, if Absalom would have gotten the victory, it could have possibly cost them their lives. But they applied wisdom. They were not looking at just a here and now. In history, not in the Bible, I'm not that familiar with, but like Alexander the Great, Hitler. And then in our Anabaptist history, we have men like Felix Mons and George Blaurock and Conrad Grebel that were willing to step up and to rebaptize, not knowing what all was going to happen, standing for truth with what the Word of God teaches. In Romans 15, verse 4, it says, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." And I believe that verse right there refutes that statement that we don't learn from history, because these things were written for our learning. And of course, we know that God wants us not only to learn, but He wants us to apply wisdom with the things that we do learn, the knowledge that He gives us. He wants us to get wisdom from Him, and He wants us to apply that wisdom as we make history, as we live life, all to the glory of God. I'd like to read Psalm 78, just a short history lesson here, a short story of the life of the children of Israel. He says in verse 1, "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He hath done. For He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children." But here's a passing on. God is wanting us to not only learn from history ourselves, but He wants us to teach the next generation about the history. He wants us to tell our children the Bible stories, things that happen, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that it would be a continuity, there would be a continuous, a going on, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. The children of Ephraim, being armed and carrying bows, turned back in the day of battle. They kept not the covenant of God and refused to walk in His law, and forgot His works and His wonders that He had showed them. Marvelous things did He in the sight of their fathers in the land of Egypt, in the field of Zoan. He divided the sea and caused them to pass through, and He made the waters to stand as an heap." That is history, something that happened. Moses is another example of someone that made an impact in history. how that God used him and God divided the Red Sea. The children of Israel went through that. That is a part of history, a very interesting account of history. In verse 14, in the daytime also he led them with a cloud, and all the night with the light of fire. He clave the rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink as out of the great depth. He brought streams also out of the rock and caused waters to run down like rivers. And they sinned yet more against him by provoking the Most High in the wilderness. And they tempted God in their heart by asking meat for their lust. Yea, they spake against God. They said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock, that the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Therefore the Lord heard this and was wroth. So a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger also came up against Israel, because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. Though he had commanded the clouds from above and opened the doors of heaven, and had rained down manna upon them to eat, and had given them of the corn of heaven. Man did eat angels' food. He sent them meat to the full. He caused an east wind to blow in the heaven, and by his power he brought in the south wind. He rained flesh also upon them as dust, and feathered fowls like as the sand of the sea. And he let it fall in the midst of their camp round about their habitations. So they did eat and were well filled, for he gave them their own desire. They were not estranged from their lust, but while their meat was yet in their mouths, the wrath of God came upon them and slew the fattest of them and smote down the chosen men of Israel. For all this they sinned still and believed not for his wondrous works. Therefore their days did he consume in vanity and their years in trouble. When he slew them, then they sought him, and they returned and inquired early after God. And they remembered that God was their rock and the high God their redeemer. Nevertheless, they did flatter him with their mouth, and they lied unto him with their tongues. For their heart was not right with him, neither were they steadfast in his covenant. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away and did not stir up all his wrath. For he remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passes away and cometh not again. How oft did they provoke him in the wilderness and grieve him in the desert? Yea, they turned back and tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel. They remembered not his hand, nor the day when he delivered them from the enemy. How he had wrought his signs in Egypt and his wonders in the field of Zoan, and had turned their rivers into blood and their floods that they could not drink. He sent divers sorts of flies among them which devoured them, and frogs which destroyed them. He gave also their increase unto the caterpillar, and their labor unto the locust. He destroyed their vines with hail, and their sycamore trees with frost. He gave up their cattle also to the hail, and their flocks to hot thunderbolts. He cast upon them the fierceness of his anger, wrath, and indignation, and trouble, by sending evil angels among them. He made a way to his anger. He spared not their soul from death, but gave their life over to the pestilence, and smote all the firstborn in Egypt, the chief of their strength in their tabernacles of Ham, but made his own people to go forth like sheep, and guided them in the wilderness like a flock. He led them on safely, so that they feared not, but the sea overwhelmed their enemies. And he brought them to the border of his sanctuary, even to this mountain which his right hand had purchased. He cast out the heathen also before them, and divided them an inheritance by line, and made the tribes of Israel to dwell in their tents. Yet they tempted and provoked the Most High God, and kept not his testimonies, but turned back and dealt unfaithfully like their fathers. They were turned aside like a deceitful bow. For they provoked him to anger with their high places, and moved him to jealousy with their graven images. When God heard this, he was wroth and greatly abhorred Israel, so that he forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent which he placed among men, and delivered his strength into captivity and his glory into the enemy's hand. He gave his people over also unto the sword, and was wroth with his inheritance. The fire consumed their young men, and their maidens were not given to marriage. Their priests fell by the sword, and their widows made no lamentation. Then the Lord awaked as one out of sleep, and like a mighty man that shouted by reason of wine, and he smote his enemies in the hinder parts. He put them to a perpetual reproach. Moreover, he refused the tabernacle of Joseph, and chose not the tribe of Ephraim, but chose the tribe of Judah, the Mount Zion, which he loved. And he built his sanctuary like high palaces, like the earth which he hath established forever. He chose David also his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds. From following the ewes with great with young, he brought him to feed Jacob his people and Israel his inheritance. So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart, and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. Well, that is the psalmist's account of the history of the children of Israel, and there's a lot more to it if we would really study the Bible. And we're told that history repeats itself. And when we study the life of the children of Israel, we can see that's true. You know, they turned away from God, they came back, they turned away from God, and they came back over and over and over again. Does history have to repeat itself? It does not. You know, if it does, it's because of, in other words, in that fashion, of sin, of turning away from God, it's because of our humanity. It is not God's fault. It is not any part that lacks from God, but it's because of our humanity, of our failure, not His. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11 says, "Now all these things happen to them for examples, and they are written for our admonition." They are written so that we can learn, we can apply wisdom. He says, "Upon whom the ends of the world are come." We are living in the last days, the latter days, if you will. History doesn't have to repeat itself. You know, each generation is responsible. Each of us, we are responsible for the decisions, the choices that we make. We are responsible to seek truth, to walk with the Lord, to abide in Jesus Christ, to continue in faith, so that history doesn't have to repeat itself. And we are responsible to do that regardless of what the generation before us did or what the generation after us will do. The buck stops here with us as individuals. Now, Daniel had a dream in our Sunday school lesson today, but this message was actually born. I don't usually put a lot of stock in the dreams, but this message was actually derived because of a dream that I had. And of course, like dreams usually are, things are kind of foggy. But the way I remembered is I was, you know, walking along, and I came to this old shack, and inside the door in the wall of this shack, there were a bunch of nails and the records. I couldn't see what the records were, but the records were being kept on those nails. And it had started out with, you know, like the ancients, the antique nails would have been, the crude nails. And then as the nails were made better and better, it moved up into, you know, better, nicer formed and shaped nails. And then it moved up into ring shank nails, which would not have existed back in the day. And then finally, the records were being kept on screws, which would have not, you know, been used in that way back in the day. It would not have existed. And the same thing applied in the cemetery somehow. You know, and that was just like a foggy vision. And I was wondering about that, you know, how would that apply? But then I got to thinking, well, what did they use for markers for a grave back in the ancient days? You know, I think the Bible talks about them setting up a stone. Well, you know, those things have changed too. The markers that we use today are quite different from just a stone. They're pretty fancy. Things have changed, you know, the keeping of records for the graves, the monuments. And as we look at history, and what I get from that dream I had is that when we look at history, there's going to be change. You know, things will progress or sometimes decline. When I think back to, or when I look in the Bible and look at before the flood, it says that there were men of renown, you know, famous men. You know, which indicates to me that there was change from the time that Adam and Eve were created and were cast out of the garden because of their sin until the time just before the flood. You know, I don't know how advanced they were, but it says they were men of renown. They were mighty men. So it would indicate there was a lot of change that had come about before the flood. In 2 Timothy 3:13 it says, but evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. That speaks of change right there. But he says in the very next verse, but continue thou in the things thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned them. So he is telling us as Christians, as believers, that in the midst of that change, continue in the wisdom, in God. Continue in Jesus Christ. Don't let those things move you and sway you. Things are going to change. Things are going to be different. But continue thou in wisdom, in truth. And perhaps the greatest change that has ever happened in human history is when Jesus came and established the new covenant. God establishes new covenant with his people. And we were talking about people that made a difference in history, contributed to history. I believe Jesus was the greatest contributor to history ever. He made more difference in the lives of more people than anybody else ever did or ever will. Jesus Christ. And we look at the change that came about. It was a drastic change, you know, from the old law, the Mosaic law, the old covenant that God had with his people. And now Jesus comes in and this new covenant was established. And there was a lot of resistance. You know, it was like we've been using these old antique nails for years. Now all of a sudden somebody wants to put the records on screws and we want nothing of it. You know, you can't drive a nail by turning it in. And that's something completely foreign, you know, to turn a nail into the wall. We don't want that. We want to go back and hit it in with a hammer or a stone, maybe. It's what they were using at the time. Probably didn't have hammers yet. We don't want these screws. And we look at the life of Saul. Saul was one of those people that didn't want change. You know, he was serious enough about this that he was willing to have people killed if that's what it took to prevent this change from happening. That's what he was trying to do. But it's interesting that Saul was someone that was actually sincere. He actually wanted truth. And when God got his attention on the road to Damascus, and God showed him the error of his way, you know, Saul was changed from Saul the persecutor to Paul the preacher, because he actually wanted truth. You know, he cried out on that road to Damascus, you know, Lord, what do you want me to do? Because I believe he actually honestly thought he was doing the right thing. He thought he was fighting for truth. And the thing that I believe we can learn from Saul is that no matter how sincere we are, we can still be wrong. And that's something we can learn from history. You know, he was sincere. He wanted truth, but he still was wrong. But I believe we also learn from Saul that when we seek truth with all of our heart, God will show us the truth, even if it means knocking us down and making us blind for 3 days. God will show us the truth some way. I had an experience here recently with a tech that I called for some help. Matter of fact, we had spoken on the phone previously, and then I sent an email with a problem with a part that we had on some engines that was too flimsy. You know, it didn't perform as this part should have. If you would try to make it do what it was supposed to do, it would bend eventually. And, you know, would just get worse and worse to where it wouldn't work at all. And I had previously complained about this to several different techs. This was like the second, maybe the third time I was talking to this particular tech. But in this conversation that I had with him the other day, he was insisting that the part they had was good enough, and that the reason it was causing a problem was because we weren't doing our job, we weren't adjusting it correctly. and so therefore it wasn't working right for us. And he was trying to tell me how we should adjust it. Well, I had already tried adjusting it the way he told me to, and I knew that if you did that, it would bend it. Which later, the rep showed up and tried to do that, and that's what he ended up doing. He bent the part, and I had to replace it. We hung up, you know, I was insisting that this part was too flimsy, it was not strong enough, it needed to be redesigned. We hung up the phone with him insisting that it was strong enough, me insisting it wasn't. Well, it wasn't, but a day or so later, he calls back, and he said that he had called the factory in Mississippi, and that they were actually working on a prototype. I guess they had gotten enough complaints about this part. They were working on a prototype. We don't know when it's going to be out, but we're working on a prototype that has been completely changed, that is going to take care of the problem that we're having. And he explained to me how it was going to be different, and I said, yes, that will work. And he said, I'm going to try to get you a prototype and let you look at it once they're available. Now, I was thinking about, you know, this tech. In my mind, this tech was not open to truth. The truth is that the part they had was not sufficient for the job. And I'm sure my attitude, you know, with me being adamant that there was a problem, didn't help him in admitting that there was a problem. But I was thinking about how much different this could have gone down if this tech would have listened to me, just heard me out, instead of trying to insist that we are doing things wrong, would have just heard me out and then would have made the phone call and would have found out that, lo and behold, the factory is already working on a fix for it, has already acknowledged that there's a problem instead of insisting there is no problem. Isn't that so many times the way we go about it? We make history in the wrong way. You know, when we're not open to truth, and I'd like to look at James chapter 3 for some insight on that as to how God would like for us to be when we're faced with things that maybe aren't so nice. Things that we think are a certain way when maybe they're not. He says in verse 13 of James chapter 3, he asks the question, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his work with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Now there's a lot of food for thought in that passage. It asks the question, if we have a wise man, someone who has studied history, someone who has looked at history, and has been endued or has been given knowledge, and he is applying that knowledge, let him show his life, let him show by the way he lives, his works, the things that he does, let him live with meekness of wisdom. But he says, if you have bitter envying and strife in your heart, in other words, if you are refuting the truth, if you are saying that the way we are doing these things, the part that we have made is okay, even though it is actually insufficient. You know, that's what happens when we insist on our way instead of God's way. When we say that our way is sufficient, and it's far from being right or perfect. He says that the wisdom that is from above, that comes from God, is first pure. And then it's peaceable, and it's gentle, and it's easy to be entreated. It's easy. It has an open mind. You know, when we have that Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit, easy to be entreated, we have an open mind. It helps us to discern between the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. You know, the spirit of error, Satan wants us to believe that what we have is good enough, when actually it is not what God would want us to have. Because God has something better. God has truth for us in place of error. And God wants us to have truth to His glory, for our good, to His glory. You know, we don't want to be like the man that said he was so narrow-minded that he could see through a keyhole with both eyes at the same time. You know, we want to be open-minded. We want to be open to truth. You know, not stuck in our own narrow-minded way, but to be willing to listen and to hear what others are saying, to be entreated, be open to truth. You know, and when we have that spirit, it will definitely help us to apply wisdom as we make history. Let's kneel to pray.